Well, we're learning more today about the two U.S. fighter jets that dropped four bombs into Australia's Great Barrier Reef last week. They were on a training exercise with the Australian military. The Navy, the U.S. Navy, says two of the bombs were explosive, but they were disarmed before they were dropped. The other two were inert. Either way, the bombs were 500 pounds each, and they fell into a marine protected area. Reports say they were released because the planes were running out of fuel and needed to lighten their load, and the Navy has said the bombs had to be dropped where they were in order to avoid hitting other boats that had entered the area. Carl Safina is an ecologist and founding president of Blue Ocean Institute at Stony Brook University, and he's with us now. Carl, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, so first of all, just your reaction to this incident that happened.
Well, my main reaction is, why is it still like Lord of the Flies out there? And I keep asking myself, where are the grown-ups? Because the reason that they ditched those bombs is that there were boats where they were going to drop the bombs. And, you know, that is reckless endangerment in my book, and I just don't really get it.
Well, yeah, what they have said is that the place where they dropped the bombs was in a deep channel away from the reef to minimize the possibility of reef damage, but that the inert and unexploded ordnance is inside the Great Barrier Reef World Heritage Area. So it sounds like they knew that what they were doing was not the greatest thing in the world, but they tried to minimize the damage.
Yeah, I'm sure they did minimize the damage, and I agree that what they did is better than dropping it right on the coral reef, or for that matter, dropping it right on those boats that happened to be there. But I just don't understand why we're still feeling like we can just go and drop bombs in different places that are supposed to be places reserved for, you know, non-warfare purposes, if I can put it that way. There are millions and millions of creatures that live there. There are people using the area. And as I say, I just don't understand where the grown-ups are that we think that this is something that is okay to do in general.
And this is not the first time we've heard about things like this near or in the Great Barrier Reef World Heritage Area. I remember a story of a ship that crashed into the reef, right, with oil on board.
Right. It's a busy world and a crowded world. I think the ship is almost more forgivable because that was an out-and-out accident, but, you know, not something that they were trying to do, like trying to drop bombs on an island, and yet people are careless at times and things go wrong. They go wrong whether you're trying to, you know, ship something or whether you're trying to do something that is truly inherently dangerous, like a bombing exercise.
What kind of protections does the World Heritage Site designation offer?
Well, the idea is that it's recognition that this is a very, very special place, and that recognition is supposed to result in management that minimizes the danger of destruction of the place. And that's why the very idea of doing exercises in and adjacent to a very special place that is recognized by a world authority just shows a willingness to disregard the risk and the fact that the place is exceptional on a world stage.
The Great Barrier Reef is facing a lot of challenges right now that have nothing to do with the Navy dropping bombs. Give us a sense of how it is right now.
Well, the main problems for the Great Barrier Reef have to do with runoff from the farming on the land that changes the water quality in a way that's not really great for corals. And much worse than that is the warming and the acidification of the seawater that is caused by our fossil fuel economy. You know, when you burn anything, it creates carbon dioxide. That's the heat-trapping gas that is warming the atmosphere. A lot of the warmth is going into the ocean. And in certain places at certain times, it gets too hot for corals to survive. The algae that lives in them that produces the sugar from photosynthesis that feeds the corals, those algae leave. The corals turn white. That's called coral bleaching. And that is all driven by heat spikes. And that can kill the corals because they starve without those algae that make the food for them. In some ways, a worse problem is that when carbon dioxide goes into seawater from the atmosphere, it dissolves into seawater after we've burned fossil fuels, it creates carbonic acid, and that process starves anything that needs calcium carbonate to form hard shells. It makes it much harder for them to form the calcium carbonate. And if this process continues, as it certainly seems like it must, then there could actually come a day when the growth of coral reefs and shellfish reverses itself. In other words, they not only can they not grow, but the ocean water would actually start dissolving the coral reefs of the world.
Is there anything that can be done about that at this point?
Well, the only thing that could really be done about it at this point is for us to move off of a fossil fuel economy onto a clean renewable energy economy. And as far as I can see, we're not scheduled to do that anytime this week. And there's also a lot of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that would continue dissolving into the ocean. So there's a lot of unleashed momentum already, and it's a very, very unwieldy problem.
Carl, have you ever been to the Great Barrier Reef?
Yes, I have, actually.
What'd you think of it?
Well, it's an absolutely magnificent place. It's the largest thing in the world built by living things. It's on the scale of a mountain range, but it's actually built by corals. It's much larger than the Great Wall of China. And unlike the Great Wall, there are actually millions of kinds of things that live there, and they number in the trillions. So it's an absolute incredible, you know, festival of life, cathedral of life, whatever superlatives you'd like to use, it matches all of them.
I went diving there and saw a shark for the first time right up close and swam away. And then after that, all I wanted to do was go closer to the sharks because they were pretty cool. Anyway,
exactly.
Carl Safina, ecologist and founding president of Blue Ocean Institute at Stony Brook University, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for calling me.
And up next, we will stay in the waters of the world and talk about a big, bold plan by Nicaragua to build a canal to rival the one in Panama. The proposed canal will be built with some help from a Chinese company. But is it a pipe dream? That is just ahead.
And in our pipeline, a story's coming up this week, maybe a shock, but McDonald's has a director of culinary innovation, and he came up with McWrap. We'll hear how he's part of a push to get younger people under the arches. Also, the music that keeps young and old flocking to see the Rolling Stones 50 years on. That's coming up this week. Hope you join us. Back after the break, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.